Hoping my pictures are going to appear in a minute. As many of you know, I went to China for 10 days in October with Bible Society, and I have said a bit about it in the evening and a little bit in the morning service, but this morning I wanted to do a slightly more considered reflection on what I learned on a very inspiring and encouraging trip. This is Shanghai, you can see here, and I want to just share with you, look at some of the photos. These are the flats that they're building everywhere you go. They're massive flats being built as people move into the cities, and also related to the two readings that we've just heard. And the three key points that have really come home to me as I've reflected on the trip are that God builds and preserves his church, that God uses suffering to refine the church, and that he measures time in centuries. So let's look at those three in turn. First, God builds and preserves his church. There have been Christian missionaries in China since the 7th century, and the Jesuits went there from the 16th century, but it was really in the 19th century that China began to open up to the world, and Protestant missionaries, including 11 on our board in the corner there, do go and look at that, 11 went to China. They went out with CMS, Church Mission Society, and what was then called China Inland Mission, which is now OMF, and both of those organizations we still support today. But in 1949, after a dramatic time in Chinese history, the communists took power, and very quickly all the missionaries were thrown out, and it looked as if that dedication and commitment had come to nothing. It's reckoned there were about 750,000 Protestant Christians in China then and 3 million Catholics. But the church was banned and persecuted, particularly during the Cultural Revolution from 1966 to 76. And they lost everything, including their buildings. This is a building much like this one in the center of Shanghai. And it was turned into a cinema. They built an extra floor across the middle and used it to show films. And only now are they restoring it, and from old photographs they're redoing all the woodwork, and they spent 2 years doing that, and it's now about to reopen. They lost their leaders, many were imprisoned, and a lot of them died. They lost their Bibles. People we met said they just had one or two pages they were allowed they managed to hide, but otherwise they lost everything. All their denominations and structures were abolished, and people weren't allowed to meet together. And the number of Christians halved, Protestant Christians halved to about 400,000 during the Cultural Revolution. Many people fell away at that time. This is a lady in the blind school that we visited, and she's saying, "I have decided to follow Jesus." But she said, "During the Cultural Revolution, I gave up my faith, and I didn't come back till 1995. These are some other believers in the blind school. And that was founded by German missionaries. This is in Hunan province in 1908. But in 1958, the communists turned it into a match factory, and they had to work during the day. And they said just five or six of us met in the evening. We weren't allowed to worship together, but we could just pray. And they said our faith grew very cold. And this is Pastor Bao. And he'd just been ordained in 1966, and the Red Guards came and arrested him, and they took all his Bibles away. And he said, "The only thing I had was that I'd memorized some Bible verses from a calendar." And so he quoted Psalm 119, which says, "I've hidden your word in my heart." And he said, "They couldn't take that word hidden in my heart away from me." Church was just clinging on by its fingertips to survival. It was pretty much invisible. And probably a majority of the believers were in remote rural areas. This is where Hunan is, which we went to. And you see here the kind of places which survived. That's the pastor. I'm going to use my light now. He's the pastor up there. You can just see actually can't see it, but maybe on the other screens you can see the cross on the top of the building. Very ordinary buildings. And that's another one. It was just an ordinary house, and we had to go right out into the paddy fields to find that building. And the next one shows us walking through the fields to get to this little church. And the picture on the bottom right is us coming back from the church. You can see we're all carrying bags because they'd given us so much fruit and special slippers they'd given to us. So generous, very ordinary, poor people. And yet those were the kind of places where the church survived, often with very uneducated peasants. But the church did survive during those very, very tough years. And let's just go back to Matthew chapter 16. Jesus asks, "Who do you say that I am?" Peter says, "You're the Christ," or the Messiah, the Son of God. And he's the first kind of believer to really get who Jesus is. And Jesus says to him, "You are Peter," which means rock, "and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it." And Christians have debated for a long time what that rock is. Catholics have said Peter's the first pope, and he has a unique authority at the head of the church that he passes on to his successors. But I think it's pretty hard to find justification for that in the text or in the practice of the early church. Protestants have sometimes reacted against that by saying, well, the rock isn't Peter, it's his confession of faith that the church is built on. But I don't think that's right either, because it's pretty clear that Peter is the rock. That's why Peter gives him this nickname. And surely what Jesus means is that the church is built out of believers. Peter himself, in his first letter, says, as you come to him, you're like living stones being built together. And so as people come to their own faith in Christ, they are being added to the building. Peter is the very first of those millions and millions of believers. And Jesus' church of true believers can never die. That's what Jesus means by the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. Hades stood for death. You can take away and destroy everything else that the church has and is, but you can't destroy the very stones of which it's made, which is the believers. The church in the blind school that we visited was called the Grace and Light Church. And they said that was because even though we're blind, we have God's grace and light in our heart, and no one can take that away. And the chap on the left is now the pastor of the church that came out of that very small group of people meeting together in the blind school. It's an unregistered church. It has two congregations of 300 in the morning and 100 in the evening. That's one of the smaller Chinese churches. And the pastor there on the left is a science professor at the university. Many younger people and students are coming. And Pastor Bao, you saw earlier, who hid the word in his heart, now is part of a congregation more than 1,000 in Nanjing, with people, many younger people coming and seeking God. God has preserved his church. You might remember in the Old Testament, in the book of Kings, there's an evil king, Ahab, in power, and Elijah says to God, "I'm the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me." And God says to him, "I've kept for myself 7,000 who have not bowed the knee to Baal." God knows the number, and he's preserved them and kept them. And no power can destroy them. Not even the destructive power of the largest nation on earth can destroy God's church. Well, how did God preserve it? Well, we always ask people their story of coming to faith. And this is out in one of the rural churches. And this lady here told us her story. Because time and time again, people say, I experienced a miraculous healing. Healing has been very important in preserving the church. She said she was gored by a bull when she was 14, and she suffered terrible headaches. And after 5 years, when she was 19, she couldn't bear it anymore, so she decided to burn paper money to the spirits. But before she did that, very night, Jesus appeared to her in a dream, and he didn't say anything, she said, but from that moment, I was healed. And the headaches were gone. And again, people would tell us stories of healing. This is an old farmer in one of the churches. His wife was killed in a car accident, he thought. And then suddenly she revived and recovered. And that's her on the right there. And that's when he sort of came back to faith. Now, we don't see those kind of healings here much, I don't think. But God knew there that the church needed them. And they're a normal part of many people's story as God preserved his church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And 40 years after the end of the Cultural Revolution, from that very weak, unimpressive church has come the explosive growth that we see today. Guardian this week estimated there are 87 million Christians in China. Nobody really knows the number, but clearly they're growing very fast. And we went to Amity Press, and that's now the biggest Bible producer in the world, producing about 20 million Bibles a year. So then we go on to the second point, which is that God uses suffering to refine the church. First point, that God preserves and builds his church and nothing can overcome it. He uses suffering to refine it. Because when times are hard, only people who are really believers will persevere. You have to make a choice of whether it's real to you. There's no room for half-hearted discipleship. Bill Hybels, a leader of Willow Creek Church in Chicago, says his aim is always to preach people in or preach them out. And Richard King always used to remind me of that. You've got to preach people out as well as preach people in. You can't be half-hearted in your response to Jesus. In the end, you've got to decide. Now, of course, we want St. Michael's to be a safe place to come and explore and not to be sure and to have doubts and ask the tough questions. We always say that and we mean it. But I guess I also have to say that the purpose of that questioning in the end is to come to a decision. You know, if you end up with one foot in the boat and one foot on land, you will be in a very uncomfortable place. And that's surely why Jesus challenges the rich young ruler to give all his money to the poor, because he wants him to see the truth about his divided heart. And so persecution and suffering refines the church and makes people decide if they really believe it. When we talked to people who had started to come to church recently, over and over they said it was because they saw something different about the Christians. And they often said there was something positive about them. That was quite an interesting word, or translated positive. And I guess that's because Chinese Christians are not afraid at all to be different from the society around them. And I'm sure that comes out of a time when you had to make a clear decision. Are you going to stand up for your faith, whatever the cost? And that's challenging to us, isn't it? Because we're so afraid to be different and to stand out from the people around us. But they just see it as normal for Christians. The other thing, incidentally, that attracts people to Christianity in China is the way that Christians care for those in need. And that was one of the legacies of the missionaries who set up hospitals and old people's homes and homes for the blind. If you ever look at that board there in memory of Emily Jane Morley, you'll see there's a bed in a mission hospital in China in her memory. So the early missionaries did that a lot, and today Christians in China are still doing that. And everyone wants to get into the Christian old people's homes because they care for people so well. But going back to the way suffering refines the church, it not only takes away those who don't really believe, but it deepens the faith of those who do, and they learn they have to rely on God, because only he can preserve the church. When we asked people why the church was growing, the first answer they always gave us, it is a God who makes it grow. They're absolutely clear on their dependence on God. And they always asked us to pray for them. You can see on the left there, those ladies holding their Bibles that we'd given them and asking us to pray for them. And they did that a lot when we visited. And thank you for the contributions you made. That's some ladies in another church queuing up to get their Bibles, and she's holding hers under her right arm and so pleased to have it. And you contributed £260, which paid for a lot of Bibles for people who otherwise couldn't have afforded them. It's said in the Old Testament that when Israel went into exile, the time Isaiah's writing, they lost everything, and it said this is when they became a people of the book. When everything else was swept away and their nation was destroyed, they came really to depend on God and his word. And I think that's what's happened in China. They lost everything except God's promises to them. And yet they hid his word in their hearts. And not only did it make them dependent on God, but it also united them. Before 1949, apparently, there were lots of different Protestant denominations, and they were often squabbling with each other about little things. But there were all that was swept away in the revolution. And now there's great unity between the Christians, no denominations at all. Also no bishops. They used to have bishops, now they don't. I think that's a good thing, but don't pass that on. Bishops can be helpful, but we never saw anyone wearing a dog collar apart from our own group. And this chap on the left there is Pastor Chen, Reverend Chen, who traveled with us in Hunan province. He's the head of the whole church in Hunan, which has 70 million people in it. It's bigger than Britain. And yet he just dresses very casually and humbly like that, very down to earth and ordinary. And most churches, in fact, are run by lay people because there's such a shortage of pastors. So the result of that suffering is a church which is very dependent on God. It's united, and it's entirely self-reliant. The official church in China is called the Three Self Patriotic Movement, and it has the three self: self-governing, self-supporting, and self-propagating, which means it doesn't rely at all on outside money or missionaries. And that was encouraged by the communist government because they didn't want the church to have outside links. And when I asked the senior people in this meeting that you can see there in Shanghai about it, they said the three self principle was originally proposed by an Englishman called Henry Venn. And in the 19th century, he was a friend of Wilberforce, part of the Clapham sect, and one of the founders of CMS, Church Mission Society. First vicar of this church was one of the early CMS missionaries. And Henry Venn said when missionaries went out to start a church, they should encourage it to quickly become self-reliant. Or to put it another way, to depend not on help from overseas, but depend on God. And that's what the church has always, church in China has always aimed to be. So terrible suffering for 60 years and more, and yet God has used that wonderfully to refine the church. So it's self-reliant, it's united, it's biblical, it's not hierarchical, it has lots of laity who are very active and who run it, it's serving the people around it, and it is unafraid to be different from the culture that surrounds it. And I don't think that could have happened in any other way. And this is a country with a third of the world's non-Christians. A third of the world's non-Christians live in China. And yet here is this wonderful, faithful, attractive church that is growing by 5% or more a year, has more members now than the Communist Party in China. So God uses suffering to refine the church. And then lastly, God measures time in centuries. You may know the famous story of Chou Enlai, the Chinese leader, who was asked in the 1970s what he thought about the French Revolution, and he replied, "It's much too early to say." Well, God also takes the long view. You know, we have no idea what's going to happen in 20 years or 50 years, but God does. And when the missionaries were thrown out in 1949, it seemed like a disaster. More than a century of work wasted. The church had virtually disappeared in the years after that, and probably things looked hopeless. But now, in the 21st century, there's phenomenal openness. And you're probably wondering who this chap is. He's the head, Communist Party head of the Religious Affairs Bureau in Hunan province. And he hosted dinner for us. And came to the churches with us, has a very close relationship with the church leaders. He's not a Christian, but on the right there, he's singing a song that he'd composed at one of the services we went to. Not a Christian song, but just a song about the mountains or something, doing a kind of karaoke act. And I just used that as a picture of how warm the relationship is between many places, between the Communist Party and the church. And there may be places where there's persecution because China is so huge, but generally there's great freedom for the church. And it's in a kind of spring season. We are maybe in autumn where our influence is declining and it's getting colder. But they're in spring where the society is very open to a Christian influence for good. And I think one of the main reasons for that openness is that people's faith in humanity has been destroyed by what they've been through in the last century. There's still some pictures of Chairman Mao. He's still on the banknotes. But for many years, they were told to worship him as their great helmsman and savior. And although he's still on the notes, people know that communism was a disaster. You know, just one example, in the 1950s, there was a great famine caused by ridiculous government economic policies. And 35 million people died in a famine in the 50s. Many provinces, the leaves had all been stripped off the trees because people were trying to eat them. And so people have started looking for God because they know they need something greater than humanity. And there's this great sense of joy everywhere we went. And, you know, when we gave people their Bibles, they immediately wanted to read them. So it takes a long time, doesn't it, for human foolishness and sin to play out their effects until people really start to understand they need God. People here in our country think we're fine without God, but people there know they need something more. Well, I want to end by just looking at that reading in Isaiah chapter 51. And Isaiah is writing before the exile, looking forward about 200 years to a time when everything that Israel trusts in will be destroyed. And he says this, he wants to give them hope even as they face that. Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness and who seek the Lord. Look to the rock from which you were cut and to the quarry from which you were hewn. Look to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah, who gave you birth. Now, I think the reason he goes back to Abraham and Sarah is they were very, very old and couldn't have a child. And yet at that point, God stepped in and gave them Isaac, their son. And from that came the whole nation, from that tiny beginning, from that impossible situation. When I called him, he was only one man. I blessed him and made him many. And then he starts to give them hope beyond the ruins and the disaster. The Lord will surely comfort Zion and look with compassion on all her ruins. He will make her deserts like Eden, her wastelands like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the sound of singing. Out of the ruins will come new life and joy. And that's what we see in China today. And as this goes on, just get a sense of God's perspective. Remember, this is Isaiah writing hundreds and hundreds of years before Jesus comes. Listen to me, my people. Hear me, my nation. Instruction will go out from me. My justice will become a light to the nations. My righteousness draws near speedily. My salvation is on the way, and my arm will bring justice to the nations. The islands will look to me and wait in hope for my arm. The islands are the furthest, most distant places. And yet that's God's perspective. That's what God's looking forward to. And it says there, my righteousness draws near speedily. Well, it took another 600 years after the exile for Jesus to come. Now we're 2,000 years after that. God measures time in centuries, and yet this prophecy is being fulfilled. And right at the ends of the earth in China, in these remote little churches, people are filled with joy. And then the last verse, lift up your eyes to the heavens, look at the earth beneath. The heavens will vanish like smoke, the earth will wear out like a garment, and its inhabitants die like flies. But my salvation will last forever, my righteousness will never fail. God is working his purposes out. The nations and the governments will come and go. Communism has come and now almost gone. And people quoted to us a government official who said, we used to think government was more powerful than religion. But now we've realized that religion is more powerful than government. And God's purposes will prevail, though often it takes centuries for it to do so. So Isaiah is telling people, look forward and have hope. And these are the little churches where the church survived and where people are just filled with joy and worshiping. And this is the, when we walk through those paddy fields, this is the greeting, the reception we got, a great brass band of people welcoming us as our brothers and sisters in Christ. So it's a great encouragement to me, and I hope to you too, to be faithful where we are, even if times seem difficult at times. God is building and preserving his church, and nothing can destroy it. And he uses suffering to refine it and purify it. And he's working his purposes out for good throughout the whole world, year by year, century by century. Amen.
Nothing can overcome God's church. Isn't that an amazing encouragement to us? Jesus is the light of the world who has come into the darkness, and he's at work in our lives and in the lives of people across the world. So let's stand to sing Into the Darkness of This World.